This episode is brought to you by Diageo Bar Academy. Learn more at DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that Sam is gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hey, Souther, how are things going at Ateria, your new spot?
Man, it is really kicking off. Last night was Tuesday night, and of course, we're finally now open on Tuesdays, which I think should be a requisite for anything that's has a Mexican slant. So, of course, we kicked off Taco Tuesdays.
Yeah, there you go.
And, right? I don't know what we were thinking. And so what we're doing now on Tuesday evenings is we're having $1 tacos with any cocktail that you purchase. So people are coming in and getting some really delicious food and drinking some tequila and mezcal cocktails. But so far, man, it's not quite 4 months old yet, and we are just having a blast over there. So I can't wait for you to get back to the city and come check it out with me.
Yeah, I'm trying to get back there actually this month, this month, finally, back to New York. But I was also kind of wondering about this. So I don't know if your drinking style has changed during like COVID, but like mine, like I've always been a huge fan of, you know, martinis and Negronis and old fashions and Manhattans. Those are like the big four to me, right? They're all stirred. Mm-hmm. They're all boozy. That's nothing new to you. That's your life with like Amore Amargo, right?
Sure.
But it's more on the bitter side. Lately, I don't know what it is. And I've just been like drinking martinis like crazy. Like that's like, or it's whiskey sodas. It's just, whatever it is, it has to be really crisp and clean. And I was just thinking about Ateria, and like, since your focus is on tequila and mezcal, that is about as pure and clean and like earthy. Like I feel like the earthiness really works with kind of like going from like bitter to and like earthy, like mezcals and tequilas and raicillas and sotols and things like that. Has your drinking style changed now that, like, I mean, one, that you're dealing with another very specific spirit category, but also you've got citrus around now, which is something you never had before.
Right.
Has your personal drinking style changed at all?
I will say, you know, it's interesting that you would bring that up. And the answer is an unequivocal yes. But also in a strange way, kind of no. I think more, you know, it's just timing with Ateria opening up, in the warmer months. And I think my drinking style changes based on the weather in general. But in this case, I've started drinking a lot more. I drink tequila and tonic, which has been just, you know, refreshing and bright and delicious. And I've been drinking, speaking of martinis, I've been making martinis with mezcal. So mezcal, dry vermouth, and sometimes a little bit of orange bitters have been my kind of go-tos for the past couple of months.
Nice. I always loved, there's this Casio Ieda thing that he would always do where he'd put like a little bit of eau de vie or a little bit of vodka in like in an otherwise pretty standard classic cocktail, and it really makes all the other flavors pop. I really like the idea of using, I've always kind of, not always, but I've done it with, if I'm making a martini with, say, like Blanc vermouth, kind of like maybe even rinsing the glass with mezcal, just to give it like a little extra something, you know? And so I like that you're going full tilt with it.
Like, well, it's you know, full tilt being a 50-50, so it's still, you know, yeah. I'm washing it down pretty considerably. That's how I enjoy a martini, because that way I know I can enjoy more than one.
You know what they say about martinis, right? One's not enough, and three's still not enough.
too much of a good thing is still a good thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Speaking of, we just got the news that we are nominated for a fourth time. Is it four times now?
Four times nominated for Best Podcast, Broadcast, and Video Series by the Spirited Awards from Tales of the Cocktail. And I'm stoked. Like, I think it's great that we keep getting nominated. Always a bridesmaid is fine in this scenario.
Yeah, we've been nominated every year since it has become a category in the correct. Spirited Awards.
That's correct. I didn't think about it that way, but that's correct.
So that to me is like a bigger than a win, right? The nomination every year. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like I've always said, you know, or like I've been saying since we keep getting nominated but not winning, you know, it's probably not easy for people to remember who won 4 years ago, but we keep being in it every year. That just keeps our name up on the marquee, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm perfectly okay. You know, it's the Susan Lucci path.
Right? We got to come up with something new because I don't think people these days remember who Susan Lucci is.
I mean, I think that's just so historic. It's obviously not current, but man, she was nominated for 12 before winning her first daytime Emmy Award, right? That's kind of like the longest streak ever.
Is she still doing it?
If I know. Is she still alive? Hell if I know. I don't know, man.
See? Come on. Oh, man.
Well, here we are at the late stages of summer. You know, the embers of summer are beginning to burn out already. And another year where I've not stuck my toes in salt water or had my feet in sand, which is a crime to me. But, you know, I grew up on a beach. I love the beach. Anytime I can break away, I go to a beach. But due to the ongoing pandemic, I haven't been really more than 3 miles from my apartment in now 19 months. So to sort of at least band-aid that ailment a little bit, we're welcoming into the studio our friend Kyle from the Bahamas. Kyle, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Welcome. Happy to be here.
Yeah, welcome. Hey, man. Kyle Jones. Man.
Super happy to have you,
buddy. You know about the differences of summertime versus – I mean, you're from Hershey, Pennsylvania. So, like – you're from a place that gets pretty damn cold, and you're living it up in the Bahamas now. And you have a bar called Bon Vivants, correct?
Correct, yes.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, the weather difference. I mean, we spent about 8 years in New York City before moving down here. My wife's Bahamian, which brought us down here. So I'm a kind of guy who I like a little bit of sweater weather. So moving down here, it's like, I feel like it's my job to sweat anymore. It's just always hot. And I know, poor me, kind of thing, but, you know, you have to get used to it. You don't have the seasons anymore. It's super hot all the time. But the trade-off is you get the beautiful blue water and the beach obviously all the time too.
Yeah. It must be real hard.
It's a difficult life to wake up every day and see beautiful Bahaman water out there rippling and sparkling in the sunlight.
I do what I get.
But do you get like, I was wondering about this because I was in Hawaii a few months ago and I was talking to some friends.
Humble brag.
No, I mean, it was birthday. I had a reason. I wasn't just going there. But the thing is, I was talking with my buddies who live out there and they were talking about like getting rock fever or island fever. Does that ever happen to you? Like being there, like,
oh, 100%. I mean, it's been really hard through the pandemic, obviously, because you can't just jump out and go wherever you want to go, obviously. And that's around the world. But, you know, there's definitely island fever if you're coming from other places. Maybe if you were born here, it's not so much. But I mean, every like 3 months, I got to at least jump to Miami or maybe go to be honest, even another like out island of the Bahamas, because we have 700 islands in the Bahamas. I live in New Providence, which everybody knows is Nassau. But there's some other beautiful out islands that even if you just get off this rock to another rock, you feel like you went somewhere. But it's 100% necessary. I my sanity wouldn't be the same if I didn't get off. And the lucky thing for us, because my wife and I moved from New York City and we love New York City so much, it's a quick 2.5 hour flight, direct flight to New York, and it runs all the time. So we're really fortunate to have that to get out to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't believe I never got out there when I was living in New York City because it is so close and a lot of people do make that journey. I mean, like, so my friend Caleb, who lives in Hawaii, he said he took up surfing not because it was like a thing to do, to be like more beachy kind of island guy.
Right.
He said that he took up surfing so he could paddle out and look back at the island, and that helped him with island fever. He felt like he got enough away.
I'd love to say I could do something like that, but when I'm in the ocean and seaweed touches me, I scream. So, you know, I'm that guy. So, I love looking at the ocean. I prefer being on a boat when I go out in the ocean, but, you know, it's a little bit intimidating out there for me. So,
Yeah. It is. Ocean is no joke.
I'm such the opposite, though. I want to be in that water all the time. I don't care how deep it is or how far we are from land.
I wish.
But you got a pretty interesting trail that led you there. You lived, as you just mentioned, you lived here in New York City, mm-hmm. and you were working in bars and restaurants, it looks like, mm-hmm. Notably Spice Market from Jean Georges. But then it says here you took a break from hospitality to become a teacher. What were you, I was a teacher myself. I was teaching culinary. What were you teaching?
So my whole life I thought I was just going to be a teacher. And, you know, when I was first bartending, it was in Savannah, Georgia. I went to school at SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design. And like most people, you take up bartending as kind of like in the meantime. But I kind of fell in love with it then. And when I moved to New York City with my wife, she was in fashion. When I moved there, I continued bartending. And that's when I really got into it at Spice Market. But like some people who have that kind of like, what am I doing moment? Like, is this what I'm going to do for the rest of my life? Or do I need to quote unquote grow up? I kind of had that, like, okay, maybe I should go get a different job. Even though the entire time I was just dreaming of going back to bartending. So what I ended up doing is I ended up teaching in New York City for about 6 years at the Dalton School. I taught PE, and then I went on to teach art as well. That was kind of my calling. I wanted to be an art teacher. I always thought art was what I was going to be teaching my whole life. But again, I just got that bug in the hospitality industry. Some say why, but I just loved it. I just love being around people, and the cocktails part of it is something that I just carried with me the entire time. And even when I was teaching, I was like writing little book, like notes and books and cocktails for my friends and stuff like that. So when I got back here, when I got to the Bahamas and this opportunity arose, I was just like, all right, it's time to maybe take control over and find your happiness in what you feel like your calling was. So, I'm happy I was a teacher. I love kids. I've always thought I was going to be a teacher, but you know, real world kind of brings you into, and experiences bring you into what, you know, maybe you didn't know you wanted to do. And that all started for me really, bartending at Spice Market. So.
Yeah, man. I mean, life takes you places. And speaking of taking you places, obviously then you met your wife, or you had your wife, and you decided to go back to her home, the Bahamas. And then you kicked off an import business with a friend, right?
Yeah. So my best buddy down here was just importing some wine, like literally like 5 or 10 Burgundy wines, because this island is so, at the time, you really could only get like, if you wanted a gin martini, you could only find Bombay, Tanqueray, and maybe Gordon's. And that's all you could really bring in. And the same goes with wine. Like, it was the kind of big houses, the large corporation kind of wines. So what we kind of decided to do is tap into that kind of family-run and craft market and give people options of great choices rather than finding the same things at every single restaurant. We were like, hey, well, we have this beautiful family-run vineyard from Burgundy. I started bringing in kind of Sipsmith, and that's when they were still in the garage, and, you know, the craft spirits, and saying, look, give your people another option, because the tourists that are coming down to us are from the big cities. You know, we have New York, Toronto, London, Miami. Those are the people that are really coming to us a lot. And they expect that kind of quality, especially, you know, island prices are New York City prices. So if you're down here and you're paying $16 for a Manhattan or $18 for a Manhattan, and you're getting nothing wrong with Evan Williams, but you're getting Evan Williams, you're kind of expecting something a little different than, you know, that and like Martini Rossi or something like that. So, you know, what we tried to do is fill those gaps in those markets and bring in the right products for the people. And really, it just kind of exploded. It took off. We grew organically. We started bringing in bigger brands and stuff like that. Evian came to us, and then all of a sudden we became the number one producer distributor of Evian in the Caribbean. It just grew organically, and we didn't want to go overboard with it, but we wanted to hit the right people, not... It was more quality over quantity is our
goal. Yeah, of course. Basically, what you're doing is you're somehow, at least in the beginning there, you're curating what the island is going to have on offer, not only at your place, but at places, because you were a distributor. You were bringing it in and selling it to other people, right?
Right, right.
And then you made the decision to crack open a craft cocktail bar in the Bahamas, which at the time, I'm certain, was an unusual thing. We talked off air about how that's just, I grew up on a beach. That's just not what you think of when you go to the beach. You're not thinking to yourself, man, my toes are in the sand. It's 100 degrees. There's salt water on my skin. How about a tasty Manhattan? it's just not what pops to mind first. But so you decided to do that, but you came up against a hurdle, which was no one on that island that came to you for work had ever bartended. So suddenly you had to put your teacher hat back on. I want to talk about that when we come back, but we should probably stop and take a break and hear from our sponsors. So we'll come right back and keep talking to Kyle Jones about teaching on the island. Damon, did you know that Diageo Bar Academy is the marquee sponsor for the 2021 Tales of the Cocktail Spirit Awards, of which we are once again nominated for Best Podcast, Broadcast, or Video Series?
Sure did, Souther. You know, the cool thing is that it's been so much fun working with Diageo and the Bar Academy, because not only are they a sponsor for the Tales Awards, which we, as you mentioned, are nominated for again for the fourth year in a row, every year that it's been a category for
Best Podcast,
and online series, but also the website just keeps getting cooler and cooler. And, you know, if you're not a part of the Diageo Bar Academy, you should definitely go to DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com. Because for me, and I know we've talked about this a little bit before, but like, you know, being bar owners and managers, you know, there's like so much stuff on the website that is useful for what we do. I keep talking about one of my favorite things is the cocktail calculator. You know, like you can actually like work on the pricing. It's one of my favorite things about, you know, a lot of people find it kind of daunting, like working out pricing for menu. I love it because it's, you can really figure out a way to make things profitable while also making them a nice price for your guests, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's a great tool to have at your disposal. And again, it's offered for 100% free through the Diageo Bar Academy website. I use it with my teams at the various bars that I have oversight of. I think the bigger part for me is the sheer amount of available education, not just from that tool, which is certainly an educational tool, but just the sheer amount of education that you can get from this website that's been around for a decade already. And now they're really doing this huge push for the Bar Academy. And I think it's brilliant. Again, that low bar of entry being 100% free, all you need is the internet and you can get on. And then I highly, highly recommend that you get on their newsletter. It comes at you once a week and it kind of keeps you informed and apprised of what is happening currently. Like I said, the website's got an archive of 10 years, but the newsletter will keep you kind of current on what's going on.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like for me, I get like the New York Times, I get Diageo Bar Academy, and you know, some other things.
Something about motorcycles, I'm certain. Yeah.
But that's how I start my week off, is with the Diageo Bar Academy's newsletter. And it's really great, you know, especially right now, I can't make it to all these bars and seminars and everything that's going on in the world. But you know what I can do is I can open my inbox and check out Diageo Bar Academy.
Yeah, and stay current. So again, that's Diageo BarAcademy.com. Go sign up for the newsletter. We'll see you there.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio today, we have Kyle Jones coming to us from the Bahamas. Jealous?
Super jealous.
And we've been talking a little bit, started touching on Bon Vivant's, his bar. And so one thing that I want to say to back up to the first half of the show is that, you know, it reminds me of something that happened like about 10 years ago. I was on a motorcycle ride upstate New York, and we stopped at this little place, and you know, we're used to, and I'm not advocating for drinking and driving, by the way, but we stopped at this place for brunch, and I noticed that they had like Fernet Branca and Carpana Antica and like all these, like they had, there was like a bottle of Malort on the back bar, which is super obscure. And like, you don't really find that outside of Chicago. And I was just like, what the fuck is this place? Like, who are these people? I got to know who like opened this place. And it turns out, of course, they were from the city. They came from New York City. And so they were used to all these obscure kind of esoteric spirits, and they brought it with them because they were like, well, no one has this here. And it sounds similar to what you did. In a way, like, I'm not saying this in a negative way. I think it's this is how things change, but like, it's like kind of self-serving, right? Because you got used to being able to go into these bars and order proper cocktails made with proper spirits, right? And you saw a need for that on the island, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely self-serving, to be quite honest.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, your handle on Instagram is Mr. Sazerac.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a Sazerac drinker.
Yeah, so I was actually speaking to Southern. When I first started, when I first got here, like I told you, the drinks just weren't there, and the cocktail culture is just non-existent. And I'm a Sazerac guy. So when I went to do bar trainings and stuff like that, I would put on I did some menu creation and all that for a bunch of bars around here, but I would purposely put on Sazeracs just to make sure that I could go somewhere to drink them. But the problem was, this is pre-distribution too. When I was working with distribution, there was no American rye and there was no peixotes on this island, period. So that was my first task as a distributor, was I was going to bring in, I reached out to Michter's, I got Michter's and I got peixotes. And then from there, I literally could make Sazeracs around the island. So yeah, it completely self-serving, especially when I was going to those restaurants for distribution. But now with Bon Vivant, you know, I can control the quality of those drinks. You know, I can make sure that if you're coming to Bon Vivant, you're going to have exactly what you wanted and exactly what you ordered. You know, the classic style, the classic training, all that kind of stuff. You know, when it comes to, you know, if you want a cognac Sazerac, we can do that too. You know, whatever you want, at least we are doing our best to train our bartenders to do it the right way. And noting on what we spoke about before too is what you mentioned is my bartenders started pretty much from scratch. If we had anybody who was had any experience, it was maybe I worked at Sandals serving rum and cokes. So, you know, I had to kind of sit down. We took 3 months before we opened. We didn't open our doors for 3 months just so we could train the team on simple things: when to stir, when to shake, when to you know, dry shake. I mean, I'm talking about like from the basics, beginnings, and you know, we went through every spirit. Like, what is gin made from? Where is bourbon have to be made, and how long is it aged? Like, we went through every single aspect. And took 3 months to do it. And it was a military style training, day, morning to night kind of stuff. But it was exciting, you know, and they were excited. And it was something that had never been done on the island. So we had this amazing, amazing response from the locals when we opened, because it was the first craft cocktail bar on the island. You could go to Mega Resort, you could go to Atlantis, you could go to Baja Mar, and you have those corporate kind of feeling places. That were obviously put together by a team who never bartended, but still serving decent drinks, but they're not, you know, they're not putting their heart and soul into it kind of.
There's like an intimacy level that's missing
in
those places.
There is,
you know?
There is. It's almost like drinking in a warehouse. You know, and for us, what I wanted to do with Bon Vivant was create a space that was intimate. Exactly, that was the right word, intimate, that made you feel like you were maybe being transported away from, ironically enough, away from the Bahamas. you know, because we aren't, like what Sutter was saying.
I came all the way down from New York to be transported back to New York for a minute.
Well, you can go step out the door and go to the beach. But,
I mean, it's the same as like when people come to New York City and then they go to like a, you know, like a Chili's.
A tiki
or
bar.
Or, you know, yeah, whatever it might be, you know, like.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like the quality is the same, but like, it's
that familiarity.
You know, yeah. It's something that's like makes it's their like happy place, you know? And like for like people like us, it's like, yeah, I mean, like I, you know, I would love to go to Bahamas to like, to hang out and chill on the beach and have like Mai Tais and, and whatever. But then like, there's going to be part of me that's like, where can I go get a martini now? You know?
Right, yeah. Right. Like, it's nighttime now. I want to have a nice meal, and I want to cap it off with a nice, you know, stirred, boozy-ass cocktail.
Yeah.
So
and
how
even,
many
even
bartenders
if,
had, like, even seen, like, a bar spoon before?
Oh, if they saw a bar spoon, it was one of those ones you buy off the side of the road or something like that. It's like
how
not,
do you eat soup with this?
Yeah. I mean, even the equipment. And we would drill them on, you know, literally, like I would start every single training, repetitious training of what is this? Hawthorne. What is this? Julep. What is this? Every single day I would run down the line of every single piece of equipment. So it was like drilled into their head.
And then you started importing Cocktail Kingdom's tools, right?
Yeah. And then I have, we have Cocktail Kingdom as part of my distribution business. So I'm able to have access to all that kind of stuff and you know, make life easier for me in that kind of terms. Because otherwise I wouldn't be able to have that kind of equipment here. So
let's talk a little bit about how you feel that you're on an island of your own, kind of metaphorically, for as far as, you know, representation and maybe the press and things like that go. And then, you know, we talked about TOTC a little bit earlier, Tales of the Cocktail. You got recognized by them.
Yeah, that was a huge honor. Just to go on that one really quick, my best buddy from New York City, who I used to bartend with at Spice Market, his name's Jasper. And Jasper ended up being part of, you know, Pegu and a couple other places. And he ended up opening up Mulberry Project in New York City and now is in Tulum. He called me out of the blue one day. It's middle pandemic, probably 2 weeks into into pandemic. He goes, "Hey, congratulations, mate." I'm like, "For what?" And he was like, he's like, "You just got nominated." I said, "Nominated for what?" And he's like, "For Tales." I was like, "Get the fuck out of here." And he was like, "Yeah, you and I both got it for whatever." And it came out of the blue. And I was just like so shocked that we were in the mix because, you know, we were the only bar in the Caribbean to be nominated for that. And you know, it was such an honor, obviously, for us. But it was a shock because, you know, the big city places are rightfully always in the news and in the mouths of the people who are speaking it, you know, New York City and Miami and, you know, London, the main places, Chicago, those kind of places. But a lot of us in the Caribbean and the smaller markets, you really don't get that kind of recognition. I mean, and especially in the Caribbean area, unless it's Puerto Rico, you hear pretty much nothing about cocktail bars. Part of it is because there's not that many craft cocktail bars down here, and I get that part of it. But even the ones that are here that are really doing well, and I know that there are some other islands out there that have some great programs, you know, they're not in the mix, and they're not really being talked about. So when I saw that, it made me really excited, not only for Bon Vivant, my team and my staff, considering where we came from literally teaching them what is in gin to being nominated for Tales of the Cocktail Award, but also, you know, it made me excited because maybe some other Caribbean islands can get some recognition and maybe we'll be part of the talk now. And that made me excited for kind of the overall area that hey, maybe they're paying attention to us now kind of thing. So.
Well, right. I mean, you know, and he, not to blow our own horn here, but here you are on the show.
Yeah, oh, I know, and that's amazing. It's been absolutely amazing. Yeah.
I have to know. It's all I'm picturing in my mind is sort of like the feeling of the team from, you know, the Jamaican bobsled team. You know, like what did this do for the morale of your team to be like? We went from less than a year ago not even being able to correctly identify a julep from a Hawthorne to we're now nominated for the regional best new international cocktail bar for Tales of the Cocktail 2020.
I mean, it was huge, and it was a shame because we couldn't get together to celebrate together because we were in lockdown. Right. But everybody was just pumped. I mean, these guys are literally, even before this, they're kind of, I would say, almost local celebrities around here. Like, people know them. We have our clientele is really that young, professional, kind of hip crowd in the most part, and these guys are just part of it now. I mean, they are literally local celebrities around here. So
that's so cool, man.
It's been fun. I mean, it just, like, I love to be a part of it, and it's been fun being a part of it. But honestly, the fact that we can throw that kind of stuff on these guys who and girls who work so hard to get to where they're at, because it was not easy for any of us, even for them. You know, we went and did distillery tours. I actually took them, our bar team, to Miami. We did some sit downs with Sweet Liberty. We did some sit downs with Broken Shaker in 2020, we were supposed to come up to New York City with my whole team, and we were supposed to do some tours. Actually, Amore and Margo, I was bringing them there.
I'd love to host you. Please bring the team.
Absolutely. But you know, it's been so fun to go from literally zero to we're not 100 now, but you know, wherever we are, it's been an awesome ride for sure.
How has it been with the staff? I mean, like, as far as their camaraderie and like, are they like kind of digging into it together and like,
yeah,
unearthing like old recipes and, you know, like that kind of stuff?
Yeah. It's what, that's the other great thing to see is literally our team. And this is that typical word that everybody uses, you know, the word family. But quite literally they have become this like little brotherhood, and you know, they, when they're off, they hang out at Bon Vivant. They bring their friends and hang out at the bar they work at, you know? So that is the greatest sort of compliment to me. Is
that's
that
a point
my
of pride, right?
Yeah, it really is. I have guys, I have two of my guys got Bon Vivant tattoos. I'm like, wow, what? Like, that's amazing.
You're starting your own EO down there.
you know, and that really is such a prideful thing for me to see the people who they work 5-6 days a week. On their night off, they come and drink, you know, with their friends at Bon Vivant. So, you know, that kind of stuff really touches me in that way, that we put a place together that people want to come, and the people who work there don't hate it so much after a shift that they still want to stay there, you know? So
I would rather have my staff hanging out at my bar for, you know, if I ever want to take a break, which I never do, I can just be like, hey, yeah, someone jump back here.
Exactly.
I'm going to go exactly. On the clock real quick.
yeah. Always capitalizing on that.
But what I've also found though, Southern, I don't know if this has happened at your bar in town, sure it's happened. Mm-hmm. You were just like, there are times where like at Grand Army there, you know, there'll be like three bartenders behind the bar, and then all of a sudden there's like five bartenders because, you know, our staff will pop by and then they're like, hey, I had this idea for this cocktail. Can I jump back there and like try it out?
Impromptu R&D.
It's like Friday night in the middle of like the heat. And you've got five bartenders back there, like making drinks for each other.
Yeah,
you're still getting stuff done, but it's like it's a fun thing. And honestly, I think guests really like it. I think the customers really like it.
Oh, I absolutely agree. You know.
It makes them feel like they're part of the process.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've got your distribution business, you've got mm-hmm. Bon Vivants, and now you're working on a new project called Yellow Bell.
Yes.
And you're, again, kind of starting from scratch. You're assembling a team who've never bartended before.
Right.
and starting the process over. Talk about that and what's driving you to do that.
You know, the kind of demand and success of Bon Vivant, even for those first, whatever it was, 9 months before the pandemic, it was quite apparent. And we had quite a few offers to expand and franchise the brand. Even in like Turks and Caicos and in the States, we had people coming and people wanting to fund this. But I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And like I told you, I'm OCD. And I just knew I needed to be a big part of it and be there for it. So I didn't feel comfortable doing that right now. But when this opportunity arose, there's this incredible, absolutely beautiful boutique hotel here called the Island House. And it's talk about luxury and just they get it right. And we had a great synergy with them. It kind of got brought to the table as, hey, we have this little coffee bar, so to speak. It's called the coffee bar, but they don't really use it for a bar at all at nighttime. So they have two restaurants on property, but no proper cocktail bar. And I was just like, that makes so much sense. I mean, this it's right next to my home. We have a perfect synergy already. And to be quite honest, for me, I don't have to worry about managing the day-to-day because they have a staff there, right? They have management. They have all that kind of stuff. So the day-to-day part of it can be their kind of headache. And my headache is the cocktail program, the beverage program. And with that all said, what I wanted to do is I decided I'm not going to franchise Bon Vivant. I wanted to create new places and new concepts. And, you know, that way you can keep it fresh and people can go to Bon Vivant Friday and Yellow Bell on Saturday and feel like you're in two different atmospheres. So what we did is we created a place. It's called Yellow Bell. It's actually, people around here don't call it Yellow Bell, our national flower is called a Yellow Elder. And a worldly nickname for a Yellow Elder is a Yellow Bell. So that's the idea behind it. But it's just really, it's going to have a bit of Asian influence. It's going to be like an Asian bar bites menu, and then have like 20 cocktails on the menu, really Asian inspired ingredients and a lot of local ingredients. Going to do actually some frozen drinks, non-blender frozen drinks, which I don't do at Bon Vivants because I hate blenders. But you know, where you are in the Bahamas, like you said, people want that. So I am going to create some there as well. So it's going to be a new concept, but it's going to be fun and just something different on the island again.
I mean, you know, you get to the place, you know, I've said it a million times on the show. I say it in life all the time. It takes a decade to be an overnight success. You didn't get here as overnight as it seems, but suddenly then all the work comes at you, right? I also say the reward for hard work is more work. You're doing good work, and then people see that, so they ask you, can you do some work for me? Right. So you just get more work piled on you.
Right.
Still applaud your rising to the challenge of just taking completely green isn't even a good enough word. People who literally never held a bar spoon building these programs. And I think that's to be commended and pretty amazing.
I appreciate it. I mean, it's be quite honest, it's part out of necessity, but it's also, it's a fun challenge for me. You know, it's a rewarding challenge to be quite honest. When I see these guys, I just get a sense of pride. Like when I'm sitting at the bar, my bar or my office is the bar now at Bon Vivant. And I just watch these guys making drinks for, you know, three deep or whatever it is. And I'm just watching them pumping them out. And like there's such a sense of pride that, you know, this guy literally didn't know when to shake or stir, you know, a year ago. And now they're just, if you walked up to them and you said, I want XYZ, you know, whatever it is, they'll be able to do it. Even the classics.
Like an XYZ cocktail, and they would know what it is.
Yes. They would Yeah, so go ahead.
Yeah. Talk about your clientele a little bit. You know, you are on an island, but you said you're not positioned on the beach. What's sort of the percentage breakdown of your guests? Are they, you know, mostly tourist-driven, mostly local-driven, 50-50? Where's it land?
No, we are very, very much so local driven. But we do have quite a bit of tourists come through and the tourists usually come through because of recommendations from the hotels or, a lot come through because of our Instagram. We have a nice following on Instagram. People like to look at it. We have some pretty pictures and all that kind of stuff. And obviously it's a very photographic kind of a bar. So that's a draw. But I would say 80% of our clientele are locals.
Wow.
And to be honest, it's a blessing because that's what carried us through this pandemic. Relied heavily on tourism, we wouldn't be in business right now. I wouldn't even be talking to you guys.
Sure. Yeah.
So thank God we have such a strong following from the locals, and they really banded together and helped us through the pandemic. And you would see people showing up just, they weren't even like trying to like sit down and order drinks. They just wanted to give us some money to keep us going. And it was amazing. So we really appreciate the kind of local love that we have. But like you said, we're not a bar that's on the beach. So it's not like tourists are coming to us just to come have a Mai Tai and sit and watch sunset. We're literally a place that you come to before dinner, after dinner, and have an intimate experience, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't factoring in the time correctly, but if you were nominated for top 10 new in 2020, that means you only opened in 2019. What month did you crack the doors open in 2019?
April. I think it was April. Yeah, April.
So you had almost a solid year's run before the pandemic started making things wonky.
Yeah. And it was fun. I mean, we were rolling, man. I mean, it was amazing. Like I said, the local response was amazing. We were getting some great international press and all that stuff. And then, you know, just like the rest of the world, we took a big hit and here we are. But I can only complain as much as the next person because we're all going through it. So.
Right. Well, and it seems like, again, maybe if there's a silver lining here, Damon, I'm going to spot a silver lining. Get ready.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Maybe if there's a silver lining here, the pandemic pushed locals to your door, which gives you a good foundation. And then as the pandemic hopefully subsides, you'll also influx tourism.
Right.
And then you'll just have a really nice base of locals that are always there and the tourists that want to come there because they've heard about you through things like this, through Tales of the Cocktail, through the press that you're getting in your Instagram handle.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely a great balance for us. I mean, if we can stay local kind of oriented and still have that kind of influx of tourists, especially the educated kind of cocktail drinkers that are looking for that experience, then obviously that's where we want to sit.
Yeah, of course. In your notes that you sent over to us, you talk about the role that you're playing to sort of uplift the marginalized people that are there in the islands.
Yeah.
You want to get into that with us a little bit? Talk to us how you're,
yeah,
how you're advocating for.
Yeah. So that's obviously a pretty heavy subject, but and this is, I have to be careful not to say the wrong thing, obviously, here as far as bashing the island in any way. But, in most islands and most places, we're always quite a few steps behind in certain aspects, whether that's getting a movie months after it's been out, something materialistic like that. I think I mentioned about the fact that nobody here on this island even drank mezcal until we forced it down their throat. The more important issues are these kind of basic human rights kind of issues. We are quite a few steps behind in those. The LGBTQ community is extremely marginalized. And what we have tried to do, and women's rights and things like that, what we've tried to do is kind of be the platform and kind of be a outspoken supporter on an island where we have, I think, 400 some thousand people in the Bahamas. People are scared to speak out for these rights. I mean, businesses just don't do it. There's no rainbow flags. There's no post on Pride Month or anything like that. So our goal was kind of to be at the forefront for it, making sure that those marginalized or those that didn't have a voice had a voice, and that they knew that we had a safe space for them. And when people would come out on social media or whatever it was, we would make sure that we were the ones being combative towards them. You know, we made sure that if you said something nasty, we made sure we call you out and say you're an idiot for saying that. Just recently, we had bloody Christian Council here, who has way too much control over our government. The Christian Council bashed the U.S. Embassy for flying a rainbow flag, a gay pride flag, and obviously we weren't okay with that. So we went out off of the Christian Council and was like, "Who do you think you are?" Blah blah blah. And without them being contested, everybody would think that's just okay. And right. And that's the way it's supposed to be. And this island is this and that. We just always try to take a stance for what we think is right and try to at least guide people in the right direction and say, look, you aren't different. You aren't wrong. You be you. And we're here for you if you need us, and create that space that if you want to come drink with us, there's none of that kind of shit that's going to happen in our place. And as long as we're vocal about it, I think it's starting to catch on over the last 2 years. We're seeing more businesses actually post things during Pride Month. I'm seeing some flags here and there, and it's such a great thing to see. And I'm not saying that we are the reason for that, but at least we're there trying to fight for that.
It's so funny to me because, you think about the Bahamas, you think about just like any Caribbean island, like these are kind of like a tropical kind of paradise getaway for people. And it's like, you don't really think about cultural.
Yeah.
Kind of like the kind of restrictive cultural kind of things that are happening like that. You think about like, oh, everything's cool here. Like everything's
kumbaya.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Everything's beautiful. We're on an island.
Yeah. We all go to work on the beach and sip drinks on the beach. Yeah. That's what we do for a living, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's interesting to even consider this and talk about it, because I certainly didn't. I don't know, Souther, if you've seen any of that kind of stuff, but I guess we're, stuck in the United States doing, non-tropical things. It is really funny. I mean, like, just to think about like how that, I mean, yeah, the Christian Council involvement, it must be pretty insane there, because I mean, thinking just about like how all these islands, like there are all these Christian and Catholic, missions missionaries that would go out and kind of like shove that down your throat instead of mezcal.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, this island is very, very strong Christian oriented, and I don't have a problem with that. I mean, obviously I teach around whatever religion you want to follow and stuff like that. But the problem is it really is controlling in a lot of aspects. You know, just I'll give you one example. About 5 years ago, I think. So we had a vote here because currently women do not have the same rights as men, which is mind-boggling. So one thing that was a hot topic was if a man had a baby out of wedlock, that baby would receive Bahamian citizenship. So I'm sorry, if they were outside of the Bahamas. So if, let's say, a Bahamian was living in New York City and a man had a baby with a woman in New York City, an American, that baby can become a Bahamian citizen. If the roles were reversed and a woman had a baby, let's say my wife, when we were living in New York City, if we had my children in New York City, they would not be Bahamian. For what reason, I have no idea. But that was a hot topic because why do men get to pass down their Bahamian citizenship, but women don't? And so we had this vote 5 years ago to write it, to make it okay. And believe it or not, it didn't pass. Part of the reason was the Christian Council was out there saying, well, if you open this up, then all of a sudden you're going to allow homosexuals to be able to have their partners be Bahamian. Like the most absurd shit that you could think of, like that was coming out of these people's mouths. And the craziest part, to be quite honest, was the amount of women that voted against it, local women that voted against it. And all of us were just holding our heads like, what just happened? Like, this seemed like such an obvious shoo-in to be like, look, let's have everybody have equal rights. And somehow it got voted down. And it's still a hot topic, but it's we got other things to worry about, I think, right now. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, at least you're out there sort of literally and metaphorically raising a flag to say we're here and we're inclusive and we want you to come and see us and hang out and have a great time in our places of business and hopefully on the island at large. And I'm sure that will drive decision making. You know, I'm sure that'll drive someone to say, do they want a vacation there or not?
Yeah.
And that'll drive business to you. And then that's what happens. As much as we all decry and hate capitalism, strangely, capitalism can move the needle on these things.
Exactly.
You know, if a business realizes that they can make more money by participating and being inclusive, then they will. And then if enough businesses do it, then it's just the norm.
Yep.
So it's a strange route to get to the ultimate goal.
Sorry, I told you I was going to go deep there.
That's all right, man. That's good.
I went far away from drink. And I need a drink after that. It's better here. Better off. Right. So
I have just one sort of quick question regarding the island itself. You know, most beach locales are seasonal. What is the season there in Nassau?
So, yeah, that's a good question. We do have seasons. Winter is a great time for us, kind of into January and throughout, because I think a lot of people are trying to escape, you know, their weather. But also, it kind of the heat tones down a little bit here. By tones down, it's like 80 degrees instead of 90 degrees when I say that. But it starts slowing down in the kind of really humid months, the June, Julys and stuff like that. Now, this year has been completely different. You know, when the travel restrictions and all that kind of have diminished, all of a sudden we've been busy nonstop. There's no tourist season. It's just everybody's been coming. And the hotels are packed. It's mostly American tourists because it's so easy for them to jump from there to here. So you know, there really isn't a season, so to speak, now, but before it was, you know, mostly in the winter and those kind of cooler months where we were able to get people away from the snow.
Yeah. Well, man, I'm itching to come down and see you. You know, my buddy James Toon was down there. What was he doing with you while he was there?
Well, he came down to do a nice little boat trip. I actually knew James. Turned out I knew James back when I was bartending at Spice Market. He's a good buddy of Jasper's too. So he came through and, you know, we're going to work on getting Katana down here as well and do some collaborations up there. So we actually just got done with a collaboration with a beautiful, incredible bar out in San Diego called Kindred.
Yeah, I love Kindred.
That place is awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we did a full month and they're doing 3 months. It actually ends, if I'm allowed to plug it, ends in 2 weeks out there. And what we did is we did three of their cocktails on our menu and they did three of our cocktails on their menu. And it exploded, man. It was amazing. Corey, one of the owners out there, was telling me that the demand for that first week was incredible. Like the drink that we serve that we put on their menu is actually served out a little swimming pig. So it's, it is a swimming pig, tiki mug. And Corey said that, they didn't have them. So they put it in like a cognac kind of cup. And when people saw the picture of the swimming pig, they came for the swimming pig picture. And he said there was like a riot that first week that people were so pissed off that they didn't have this little pig mug. So that he was like, he wrote me that same night. He's like, dude, what just happened? He's like, where do I get the mugs? Let me get them. I'll buy 40 of them now. So he bought 40 of them. He brought them in. He decided to sell them with the drink. And he's like, I need 40 more. I got to go buy 40 more. Right. It was just like a fun little collaboration because we can't do these in-person ones. So it's fun to do these little virtual ones. I wanted to bring that kind of other places. And I'm searching for some other places to do that, to bring kind
I'm
of
in.
To
let's Bahamas. Do it at Eteria.
All right, let's do it, man. I'm serious. Let's make this happen.
You know, my bar is all tequila and mezcal. You seem to be a mezcal lover, so let's get it on.
All right, I'm in.
Listen, Kyle, what a great conversation we've had with you. Thanks so much for giving your time
of
to
course.
Us
Thank
from
you
the Bahamas.
Guys.
I know you're probably rather be sitting on the beach because that's all I assume you do, really.
Yeah.
That's all I would do if I lived there. You mentioned your Instagram handle is pretty popular. What's that handle so people can follow along with what you're doing down there at Bon Vivants in Nassau?
So it's just Bon Vivants Bahamas. That is at Bon Vivants Bahamas on Instagram. And then if you want to follow our new bar, which we're starting a new page for, it's in the midst of construction and all that, but it's at Yellow Bell Bahamas.
That's awesome. Are you going to be posting some sort of construction photos of building up? I love that. I love seeing the process.
Yeah, and I'm going to be posting some of the photos of training as well and the guys kind of sitting at the bar. And, you know, the amount of money that we spend just on liquor and training is absurd, but it's important. It's important.
It is
an important part of the process, yeah. So
it is. It's, if you're going to sell drinks, training people to make good drinks is very important.
Can't do it with water. Can't do it with water all the time. So
that's right. Well, again, Kyle, a really great conversation. Thanks for joining us today on the Speakeasy. That's all I've got. Damon, you want to take us out?
Yeah, that's it. Also, follow him at Mr.Sazerac. That's his personal Instagram. So, I mean, you know, when you were talking about like sitting in the beach in a beach chair with your feet in the sand and ordering.
Yeah, there's some of those pictures. Yeah, there's some of those.
Like,
yeah.
I, when Souther said ordering a Manhattan seemed weird to him, I was about to say ordering a Sazerac and then. You know, you're Mr. Says, right?
There you go.
But yeah, it's been really great having you on the show today. Really appreciate you taking the time to do it. And really, we're really excited to come. I mean, Souther, we need to make a trip to Bahamas too.
Please, man, please.
And do it.
Absolutely.
And we can do
well,
it.
Well, let me just say, guys, I really appreciate you guys asking me on it. It's quite an honor. And I told everybody, I was just like, holy shit, I'm going to be on their podcast. So honestly, it really means a lot. You guys are doing amazing stuff, and I appreciate all you do.
Oh, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Sal.
Awesome. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station. Till next week. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, everybody.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.